The roommate said Robinson wishes he hadn't done it. That's what came out this week. The roommate, who has immunity, who was Robinson's romantic partner, gave a recorded interview, and prosecutors played it in court. Robinson was shaken, looked remorseful, discussing turning himself in, which he eventually did the day after his family saw his face on the news. They also presented a handwritten note referencing Charlie Kirk, text messages about the rifle, Discord messages they're calling admissions, evidence that Robinson asked how to engrave bullets before any of this happened. That's the prosecutor's case, and it's not nothing. But this is what I keep getting stuck on. The defense isn't saying the DNA doesn't belong to Robinson. They're attacking the forensic methods, the way it was collected, the way it was processed, which is a different argument. And when the defense is going after a methodology instead of identity, it usually means the methodology actually has problems worth looking at. There is also a portion of the roommate's interview that remains sealed. The judge said it's to protect Robinson's right to a fair trial. And sure, legally, can we understand that reason? Also, understand that we can't show you this part tends to make a lot of people ask, obviously, what's in the part that you're not willing to show. Here's what I believe. Charlie Kirk's widow, Erica, is sitting in the courtroom every day. Charlie Kirk's parents are sitting there. I can't imagine what that is. And if Tyler Robinson is the man who killed her husband, she deserves a conviction that doesn't get overturned on appeal because something was mishandled. So, of course, logically, we don't want corners cut. We don't want rushed evidence. We want to get it right. And if the evidence is as strong as the prosecution is saying, then the family is correct. Release it. Let the public see it. They are requesting that. More than once, Erica Kirk has requested that because sealed evidence in a high-profile political assassination that people already have questions about. This is not a recipe for public trust, regardless of what the verdict becomes. I'm Brandon Lynette. If you're new here, this is Faith and Fire, God and Country. BrandonLynette.com. You can find all the things about me there. Moving on, just I have a lot of questions for the Charlie Kirk assassination and what is happening right now. I have a lot of questions there. It just nothing really makes sense in all of this. And social media, there's a lot of influencers that have made a lot of money on the case that still continue to make a lot of money just on the whole Charlie Kirk thing. I think it's all crazy. So I'm a little weary. I'm weary of the court system. I'm weary of what's happening. And if you have nothing to hide, then why are we trying to hide stuff? This was huge. It's a huge case. It should not be locked. It should not be locked up like JFK, okay? Let's talk about Athena Strand, the 7-year-old in Paradise, Texas. You guys saw something go viral last year that had happened November 30th, 2022. We have a FedEx driver. We don't even have to say his name. Piece of trash pulls up to her house to deliver a Christmas present, which was Barbie's. The You Can Be Anything set. He backed up his truck, supposedly struck her, and then he made a decision. The audio from inside the truck exists. It was played in court. Athena's voice is on it, and she's asking him, "Are you a kidnapper?" He's telling her she's pretty. He told her if she didn't stop crying, he would hurt her worse. A medical examiner testified she died of blunt force injuries with smothering and strangulation. DNA testing confirmed he did sexually assault her before he killed her. After he did it, he Googled her missing poster. He Googled crime scene photos. He also had an alter ego he called Zero. He had prior sexual assault charges against minors from 2013 that were pending, and he's just walking around free. In April 2026, he pled guilty to capital murder. On May 5th, the Texas jury sentenced him to death. I haven't brought that news here, but he's sentenced to death. 3.5 years from the crime to the sentence, the national average is 22 years. And this is my question. Why does anybody sentenced to death for what he did get to sit in a cell for 22 years? Three meals a day, a bed, human contact, books, television, access to a legal system that is going to spend millions of dollars and decades of time on appeals for a man who pled guilty and was caught dead to rights. Athena Strand gets none of that. She got 4 minutes of hell inside a delivery truck that was supposed to drop off her Christmas Barbies and nothing after. I support the death penalty. In fact, I think it's gone a little too soft. I support capital punishment, public hanging immediately. And I think the timeline between conviction and execution in this country is a moral problem, not a procedural one. The victim doesn't get 22 years. The predator shouldn't either. good old Michigan here. We're going to talk about Michigan again, you guys. How embarrassing. I feel like we've become the new Florida. Okay, we're giving Florida a break because we're taking on all this stuff. Emily Kurolski, I think is how you say your name, 41 years old. She's a nurse practitioner at Corewell Health in Michigan. Her specialty is newborn babies. She works with the most vulnerable human beings that exist, babies who came into the world early or are sick or are fragile. That's her professional life. At home, she lives north of Detroit. A package delivery driver noticed a smell coming from her property that was so overwhelming that he called it in. So authorities responded and couldn't stay inside without respirators. They had to leave, they had to put on gear, and then they had to go back in. Inside, they find 73 dead cats and 28 cats still living. The living ones had respiratory problems, feline leukemia. Most of them were sent to rescue organizations across Michigan. Animal control officers, they spent 3 days in that house. And she's been charged with felony animal cruelty involving 25 or more animals and improper animal burial. Wow. Those are some pretty dramatic facts. But this is the thing. At what point did anyone in her professional life, like, how do they not notice something is wrong? Can you not smell her? She's caring for newborn human beings while decomposing cats accumulate in her house. Is there any mental health screening that's happening? Any check-in? Anything that exists to catch what's clearly a severe breakdown before 73 animals die? I know the answer is probably no. Because the health care system in this country is genuinely not interested in whether the people inside it are okay. It's interested in whether they're licensed, whether they show up, whether they document properly. The internal life of the person holding the stethoscope is nobody's concern until it becomes a headline. And that should change. I feel like it won't because changing it costs money and requires institutions to admit they really don't know their employees. A lot of fraud has been coming out, and I'm going to talk about that for a second. The money that you think is going somewhere and not. Kids Wish Network is a charity, raises money for sick kids, specifically kids with life-threatening conditions. They call you on the phone, they send you an envelope. The name sounds like Make-A-Wish, which is not an accident. In fact, they even got sued by Make-A-Wish for the similar name, and they reorganized specifically to stay close enough to the to the branding to make it confusing for people. In 2012, the Kids Wish Network raised $18.6 million. They spent $240,000 granting wishes to sick kids. That's only 1.3% of the money. The Tampa Bay Times and Center for Investigative Reporting called it the worst charity in America. Over a decade, they funneled $110 million donated for sick kids into corporate telemarketing firms. The founder and his related companies were paid at least $4.8 million in salary and fees. Charity Navigator gave them 0 out of 4 stars. The American Institute of Philanthropy gave them an F. Two states fined them. The total in fines was like $6,250 for 110 million that went to phone dialers instead of children. That's just one. That's one charity. The list is long. Cancer research organizations where executives draw $500,000 salaries and less than 10 cents of every dollar reaches research. Veteran support organizations where the overhead is 60%. You've got animal welfare charities where the animals get a pamphlet and a fundraising consultant gets a BMW. Goodwill is in a similar category. I watched some viral TikToks last night, actually, a few of them about the fact Goodwill is raising their prices like crazy. But they're in the same category. People donate clothes because they believe it helps people in need. Goodwill has marked those donated items at prices that outpace actual retail stores. Their CEO made over $700,000 in the recent reporting year. The people donating those clothes think they're helping someone buy affordable clothing, but really you're funding an executive compensation structure, not a mission. And I'm not saying to never give. I'm saying start researching. Start researching. Okay? Our Underground Railroad is really incredible. That is someone that we're happy to support. But look at numbers. Wherever you're at, look at numbers before you give. Every legitimate charity has a publicly available IRS form. It's a 990. Just look at that. Find out what the CEO makes. Find out what percentage goes to the actual state of purpose. And if they resist transparency, I mean, obviously that's your answer. Give local, give directly, give to organizations where you can see the output. The infrastructure of professional charity in this country is not designed to help the people it's claimed to help. Again, what's still happening? I haven't talked to you guys in 2 days. Mitch McConnell, as of now, still has not been seen. What is happening? What is happening? There's still people trying to post that they've talked to him and that he's okay. That's every statement anytime someone asks, he's working with staff. Still, I checked today, no video, no photos, no public appearances, no schedule appearances, nothing from him. I said his wife is in Beijing 3 days after he goes to the hospital to meet with Chinese Communist Party officials. She is a private citizen with no current government role and significant family business ties to China. I said last week I couldn't confirm, the claim, or Tuesday, I said this Tuesday, can't confirm the claim that he's brain dead, and that's still true. But what I can confirm is that the information vacuum around a U.S. senator's health weeks after cardiac arrest that required CPR and full life support measures in a political environment where that senator's seat could significantly affect the balance of power. This is not acceptable. The American people are entitled to know whether their elected representatives are capable of serving. Clearly, he's not. We make the next move. That's it. That's how fast it should have gone. How is it that 3 weeks have passed and they're not doing this? The same standard to apply to Mitch McConnell that I applied to Joe Biden. Age and health are not disqualifiers by themselves. Hiding them from the people you represent, that's the disqualifier. That's the disqualifier. Tinfoil hat. There's a question that's been running through alternative media circles for years, and I think it deserves to be said out loud. And it's a pattern. It's a pattern worth examining. I'm not saying it's a verdict. Do I have solid proof outside of what we know happened in Epstein files, outside of what we know in the rumor mill circles? No, but what is the price of admission to the highest levels of power in the entertainment, political, and financial world? Because there is a pattern, and patterns mean something. Celebrities who arrive at a certain level of fame often go through a visible transformation. Like something shifts. They talk differently, they talk about the industry differently. In the rare moments they let their guard down, some of them warn others about stuff they've encountered. Some of those people end up dead under circumstances that generate more questions than answers. And if you look at the celebrity trans child conversion, like if you look at those numbers, it doesn't make sense. There are multiple high profile families where a child has been publicly transitioned at a very young age before they could consent to much of anything. You guys, these little kids don't know what's happening inside of them. And the parents just complicate everything. So I feel like that's the sacrifice. Firstborn sons, that's a rumor that you lose your firstborn sons. You guys can go through to Google, or I don't know if chat would actually tell you. It takes a while to get down the rabbit hole, but find out celebrities whose firstborn sons they've all lost. And in those families, I'm not finding the trans kids. But then people that either don't have sons or didn't lose them to death, they have to be trans. And so it's a huge pattern. Like, what is the point of this? This is the cost of selling your soul. This is it. Firstborn sons or my kids have to be trans. And who benefits from the normalization of gender transition in very young children? Who profits from the medical infrastructure around it? Who benefits culturally from the idea that a parent's willingness to transition their child is like a signal of progressive loyalty? You should be in jail. But the deaths, I mean, if you look at them, they are unexplained, untimely, they're suspicious. It is like people who got close to a level of access where they could have seen stuff, people who were vocal about certain things and then went quiet or went away. The pattern is not random. When the same types of people keep dying in the same types of circumstances under the same types of official explanations that never quite add up, the rational response is to notice. There's a price to be in the big club. That's true. There is a price. I mean, you're giving your soul. I know that the people who get in seem to give something to get there. And I know that the people who get close to the edge of that world and decide to talk about it, what they saw, they tend to not get to stay there. Like the patterns are crazy. And I think anybody, which is exactly what I'm talking about with this Charlie Kirk case, you know, there's so many people that have their opinions of what happened, and the internet is divided. Over a podcaster. And the truth is, I've never followed her. I've not. There's just something that I'm not interested. Also, I mean, Charlie Kirk's widow, there's a bunch about her. And the same thing is true. I don't follow her. I liked Charlie Kirk. I like Charlie Kirk's work. And there's nobody else is him, right? So it's not like, oh, well, Erica replaces Charlie or this happens. That's not really what happens. But what I can tell you is all of these people that are on the big stage, everybody, probably including even, you know, the president of the United States, all of them had to pay a price to get to do whatever it is they do. And do I think my president is an incredible disruptor? Yes. But I also think he's paying a price. I don't get to know what that is. And God's not going to ask me his business, right? He's not going to ask me about his sin. He's going to ask me about mine. But our job is just to continue to ask questions and to watch the patterns and to keep praying for that discernment. If you're on the big stage, I feel like you sold out for that. This is an area where I genuinely believe that things are happening that we will never fully know. We're never really going to know. We're not going to know the truth about Charlie Kirk. You've seen all the videos about the bullets and what that type of bullet would do to someone. I mean, I watched it blow through two cow necks and break a brick today. Same bullet, same distance, exploded through two cow necks and shattered a cinder block. You know what I'm saying? So we know logically there's things that just don't add up. And then you've got people that are being paid on the internet to fully support what's happening in the court system because whoever is trying to keep this clean and neat and tidy. So let's pay this influencer to say this, but still want the internet divided. So we're going to pay this influencer over here. We're going to give this person whatever they want to keep their mouth shut and go along with whatever game it is. We're never going to know the truth. Never. I don't think we're ever going to know about all the Epstein Islands that exist. I don't think we're going to know about all the demons that are fooling us to our faces. I don't think we're ever going to fully know the truth about so many things. And the only protection against being deceived, honestly, is the Holy Spirit's discernment. It is not your own intelligence. I did see when I'm researching today, I wasn't very, I don't know how to explain to you guys. I want to research for you guys, and my heart wasn't really in it today because I'm just like, the world's exhausting. Right? Like this Charlie Kirk thing is really bothering me that we're just going to have to eat whatever truth they decide to feed us, like everything else. And, you know, there's just kind of a lot of things that I'm kind of bothered by. And I felt like, can I serve you guys when I'm just feeling ugh about the world? Can I? And the truth is, I can because I saw a couple, I saw this post. I've seen it a few times and I haven't talked about it here. I know you guys see you've seen that claim, Anton LaVey, he's the founder of the Church of Satan. And they said that when he was on his deathbed, I know you guys have seen this. He's like, oh my, what have I done? There's something very wrong. There's something very wrong. I can't verify. I couldn't verify that quote. I couldn't verify it. The Church of Satan is like, that's bullshit. But of course, the Church of Satan is gonna say that is bullshit, right? So we don't really know. I can't verify that's what he said. But the quote started circulating about a decade after he died, and it came, I think originally what I found out today, it's a Christian TV host who said he'd heard that. And this is the thing. The idea behind the quote is circulating because it feels true to something real. Like people who have spent their lives in the service of darkness, I feel like they're all going to encounter something when they get to the edge of death. I feel that. Like all these people we talk about all the time, everybody that's on the big stage, everybody who has their hands dirty, everybody who sold their soul to the devil for whatever they were getting, money, fame, accolades, whatever that is, they are going to encounter something terrifying. And there is testimony about that across history from people who were present for deathbed moments, whether LaVey had his is unconfirmed. But there are other quotes, like Voltaire. He spent his whole life mocking Christianity. And it's reported that he died in terror. Thomas Paine, he wrote against religion. And he said, I would give worlds if I had them. If the Age of Reason had never been published, stay with me. It is hell to be left alone. Aleister Crowley, the self-described most wicked man in England, reportedly saying, I am perplexed. Satan, get out. He said this on his deathbed. This is it. It's gonna happen. We're all going to face that spiritual moment in our lives at the end. And whatever price people are asking you to spend to sell out, I'm telling you not to do it. From the mouth of Jesus Christ himself, recorded in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 16, Jesus told a story exactly about this. There's a rich man. They didn't give a name. He's just a rich man with fine clothes, feasting every single day like he had everything. At his gate, there's a poor man named Lazarus, covered in sores. He's hungry for whatever might fall from the rich man's table. Dogs came and licked the wounds of Lazarus, and both of them die. Lazarus was carried by angels to Abraham's side. The rich man ended up in Hades, in torment. And from that place, he looked up and saw Abraham far off and Lazarus with him. And he called out, Father Abraham, have mercy on me. Send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in my water and cool my tongue because I am in agony in this flame. And Abraham said, Child, remember that in your lifetime you received good things. And Lazarus, in like manner, bad things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. And besides all this, between us and you, there has been a big fix so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross over from there to us. And the rich man said, Then I beg you, Father, send Lazarus to my father's house, for I have five brothers. Let him warn them so they don't come to this place of torment. And Abraham said, They have Moses and the prophets. Let them listen to them. The rich man said, No, Father Abraham, but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent. And Abraham said, If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead. So just think about that for a second. If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead. If they do not listen to what they've already been given, they will not be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead. We've been given a truth. We've been given the truth, all of us, every single one of us, whether you believe or not. And the scripture is available. The gospel is available. the evidence of God's hand in history, in creation, in the documented testimony of thousands of years of human experience, it's available. And the people who reject it, they don't do that because they haven't been given enough information. They do so because they have decided the information doesn't apply to them. That's the same thing the rich man decided every day while Lazarus sat at his gate. Here's what this parable doesn't say. It doesn't say the rich man was a murderer. It doesn't say he was a drug dealer or a crime boss or a cult leader. It doesn't name a crime. He was just a man who had a lot who feasted while a suffering person sat at his front gate who never closed the distance between them. That's it. That's all it took. And when he got to the other side and understood what he had done and hadn't done, that's where it was fixed. Blocked. No one crosses this. Eternity is too long to be wrong. That sentence is not something Anton LaVey said on his deathbed. That sentence is the reason it would have mattered if he had. We are all standing at the gate of something. The question is whether we're going to look at what's sitting there and close the distance while we still can. On the Iran situation and everything else that feels like it's spinning out of control right now, the back and forth of negotiations, the sense that Israel is pulling the strings, the frustration of watching decisions get made by people who are bought and paid for, and knowing you will never see the full picture of what they're actually doing. Again, I'd be a liar if I said it didn't exhaust me sometimes. Today is one of those days. It's like we watch the same cycle. Nothing is new under the sun, right? But we're watching these same players, different newspaper headlines, and it's the same outcome. But the thing that gets me through today, and the thing that gets me through every day that I face this information and I just feel heavy and exhausted and like no accountability. I know something that doesn't change with the news cycle, and it's this. There will be wars and rumors of wars. Jesus said that. He said it 2,000 years ago, and it's been true in every generation since. The geopolitical situation does not surprise God, who spoke it into prophecy before any of the governments existed. He also said, "See that you are not troubled." Not pretend it's not happening. Not ignore it. See it, know it, and do not be controlled by it. The peace that's available right now is not the peace of a resolved situation. We are in a spiritual battle. The devil is not giving up. He's a relentless beast. We can't wait for stuff to settle. What we need is the peace of a settled foundation, a foundation that doesn't move when the headlines change. The foundation that doesn't depend on what the Iranian negotiators do or what Benjamin Netanyahu decides or what happens in the next House vote. I just had a thought. I'm super curious. Mitch McConnell, do you think that, what was his conversation like? He did a lot of really not nice things. And I just, that's horrible. Horrible to think what he could have been facing. And I really do truly think he's dead. I mean, we all know that, like, we all agree, right? That he's not alive. Is there anybody that really thinks he is? But they think we're stupid enough to buy that. I also think, when my husband and I were talking this morning, I think about what it would look right like right now if Kamala had won. I think about the specific people who would be in these rooms making decisions. And whatever frustration I have right now, even with my president, and I have real frustrations with stuff right now, I just want to say I'm genuinely grateful that we are where we are instead of where we would have been. It's almost like we had to choose the lesser of the two evils. And I'm not saying that the president is evil. I'm saying there's a spiritual warfare. I think he's a great disruptor, but I also don't know him. Okay? I don't know him. God's going to do that. And I'll tell you guys right now, God works through imperfect people. All of us are sinners, presidents, senators, judges, people, preachers, people that work in the church, teachers, every single one of us. We are imperfect. Had any of us figured this out, had any of us come through here blameless and clean, we would have never needed our father to sacrifice his son. Ever. So do I know that everybody's a mess? Yes. Do I think there are different levels to what the mess can be and the repercussions for what the effect would be on the future of the United States of America? Absolutely. I think that matters. I can vote for someone and know that they are not this perfect Christian, this perfect idea of a human who's going to make everybody happy. It's not the president's job. You make yourself happy and then you enjoy life and everything that's there. But what I know to be true is that God works through imperfect people and imperfect processes towards his own purpose. He uses everything. That has always been true. So when you're like, this stuff is crazy. This is terrible. This is awful. This is happening here. Charlie Kirk's death, absolutely, horrifically, should have never happened. Even God used that. You know how many people came to Jesus that day? So he took the worst moment in a family's life, the worst moment in Christian influence, the worst moment by taking someone who is great, not perfect. I promise you he's a sinner, because we all are, or we wouldn't have needed Christ. God took something terrible and he's brought good out of it. And I see it all the time, the testimonies of people that have come to Christ because of him. Even a few celebrities that have come to him, and not the big stage celebrities, but you know, the household name, you'll know who they are. He's always going to make things work to his will. That has always been true, and it's true now. The outcome is not in question. Do you understand me? The outcome is not in question. I know what happens at the end of this. What's in question right now is what do we do with ourselves while we wait for it, while we wait for the good to come from what God is moving in our lives, from what he's using other people for? What do we do while we wait? Number one, if you've never given your life to Christ, that's where we start. You just heard about a man who had everything and ended up begging for a drop of water. You heard about a woman with a house full of dead cats who worked with newborn babies. 7-year-old girl who asked the man who was killing her if he's a kidnapper. You've heard about money that was taken in the name of dying children and spent for billionaires' cars. The world is the devil's playground. It is what it is. There is a vast evil moving through, and it's moving fast because it's desperate. It's desperate because that's what happens in the end. When you have nothing to lose, you release all the evil. You go crazy. And the world has been what it is for a very long time. The fix that the rich man encountered did not open the day he died, it's still there. It was open every day he walked past Lazarus at his gate and chose not to close it. The wall between you and a life in Christ is not fixed yet. That's the difference between his story and yours. Like the door is open. Like right now, that door is open. You can get through that wall. It's crossable. And the Father is still watching the road to see if you're going to come running up that road. I'm telling you, come to him now with all the questions still open, with all the frustration and the cynicism and the exhaustion of watching the same systems fail, the same people in the same ways, decade after decade, with all of it. He's not waiting for you to figure it out. It is not your job. It is not possible for us to figure this out. And please, when it becomes too heavy, do what my husband does. He's like, nope, can't talk about it. I'm out of this right now. Like, he sets these boundaries because he knows he just takes it on physically. And what's going to happen to us? That's exactly what they want. They want us angry and frustrated and hopeless and desperate. And yeah, there's going to be a moment of that. I felt that moment today. But the thing is, I also still know the truth. It's not mine to figure out. I can't frantically demand and search for answers of the truth. I can tell everybody, let's question everything. I continue to question everything, but I'm not going to lose sleep over not knowing the truth about stuff that's out of my control. It is not my job to figure it out. God has everything and everyone, the whole world in his hands. He is the way, he is the truth, he is the life. In a world where truth is sealed and the evidence is questioned and the deathbed quotes are out there and the patterns are real, but the full picture is just hidden. He's the one thing that doesn't require you to wonder or question or ask. You guys, eternity is too long to be wrong. Faith, fire, God, country. I love you guys. I'll see you next week.